There's a whole sub-area of human-computer interaction called information visualization, and more recently something called visual analytics. And this is a growing, this is an area with growing importance because we're coming into an age where there is just a ton of information. This information is being collected by all sorts of things. We have sensors that are really small now. So if you think about the sensors that you have in your phone, it's also being collected because a lot of things are becoming computerized. So your point of sale systems are collecting all sorts of sales information for stores, all of this kind of stuff. So there's a lot of data that we're going to need to deal with. So what information visualization and visual analytics allow us to do is that they're really about building tools that represent this information in such a way that we can derive insight essentially from these from this data. And the core idea in information visualization and visual analytics is, can we change the structure, can we change the representation of that information? And perhaps through interaction, can we allow people to sort of derive insight and derive new understanding in that data? And so one of the precursors to all this is information representation. That is, how can we represent information in such a way that the ideas that are inside that information are very easy for us to glean? So if you take a look at the next slide, some of the things I want you to get out of this presentation today are to be able to describe some characteristics of good information representations, to discuss the relationship between information representation and problem solving, and identify factors that affect what a good presentation is or representation is. So some very simple representations that you've probably seen are charts and graphs and this type of thing. And so these are very common representations, nothing wrong with them, sort of. And there's a guy named Edward Tufte who's a designer, and he's really come down hard on this notion of chart junk. And so I want you to be able to understand what his argument against chart junk is and to sort of know what he's trying to say. And then Edward Tufte comes up with this notion that he calls data density. And I want you to be able to articulate what the relationship is between data density and chart junk. So just to start off, if you hit the next slide, I want you to take a look at this image right here. And if you can't figure out what this is representing, then big kudos to you. Most people can't. And that's because it is actually... this is the London Underground Tube. This is their subway system and all the different routes. So all the different routes are actually represented through different colors. And I want you to think a little bit about what this representation actually does a good job of showing and what it doesn't do a good job of showing. And I'll save that, I think, for a discussion in class, because I think this is a bit of a fun example of kind of how representation sort of plays out. If you take a look at the next slide, this is the representation that most people using the tube, the London Underground, actually look at most of the time. This is the thing that you get as a handout, essentially, as a pamphlet. They also use this to represent the relationships between the different lines, and they show this in the stations and stuff like this. So some of the things that, you know, there's a lot of information here, obviously. Some of the things are there are the different zones, what the different names of the names of the different stops are. You can also see where the lines actually merge and kind of go along in the same direction. They've done some interesting things here. They've abstracted away some of the distance between the stops. So if you take a look at the previous image, you can actually see that some of the distances between the stops are quite large, particularly as you get outside of the city. But that representation here takes that away in some way. It's also abstracted away some of the directions between the stops. So it's not perfectly kind of in these nice sort of cardinal directions. And it exaggerates some of the distance between the stops and the downtown core. And the reason why they do this is for the purpose of actually showing you kind of these names. So if they were actually as close as they really are, as you saw in the previous slide, you actually wouldn't be able to read all of the names. And I believe actually this version of the London Underground Tube, actually this representation actually won a lot of different awards. It's pretty cool. If you take a look at the next slide, so we're on slide 5 now, you'll see this is sort of a compromised version that actually does a little bit better of a job of showing you what the directions some of the lines are, but it's somewhere in between those first two. So I think it's kind of interesting. It's a little bit easier to see with a line that we're probably a little bit more familiar with. So if you take a look at the next two slides, you can actually see this is the C train line, and you can see what it actually is. And then if you hit the next slide, you can actually see sort of the map that we see at the stations themselves. And again, what they've done is they've done the exact same tricks, right? They've abstracted away some of the directions. They've abstracted away certainly the distances between the different stops. And part of the purpose is just to make it easier to read and easier to interpret. So the punchline, if you hit the next slide, so this is slide number 8, is that good representations show essential elements of the event or the world, and they leave out irrelevant elements. They've selected representations that are appropriate for the person, given the attention that they have or what they need to interpret from it, and it's appropriate for the task. So they've actually made choices about how to represent the information. So if you take a look at the next slide, I'll just give you a quick example, and this is probably best if you sort of watch this as a slideshow and animate through. So one representation of how many buffalo are here. So imagine that you're a biologist, and one of the tasks that you have is to go into the field and actually measure kind of buffalo populations. This is important because maybe you're measuring it between different years and you want to see how the population has changed, right? So you might go in and you come up with this simple representation on your pad of paper, right? So this is kind of like the five-stroke thing. So here you can actually see that there were 12 different buffalo. Well, you might actually come up with a different representation altogether, where each adult buffalo is a full stroke, and each child like baby buffalo or whatever is actually represented by a half stroke. So what's cool about this is it actually gives you some additional information, and you can see just that subtle change in representation meant that there's a bit more information to be gleaned here. You might come up with something a little bit more clever and actually separate the adults and the calves and have two columns to record this data in. But now you can see that these different representations actually afford different kinds of things. They allow us to see different kinds of information because different bits of information are highlighted. The last thing, if you just tap one more time, is that you might actually represent this using a Roman numeral here, right? Arabic numeral? Can't remember. Whatever. A number. A number is easier to read than these strokes, which would actually require you to count them, right? A last one that you could actually use is actually, you could actually just have little icons. You could do little drawings, right? This already takes a little bit more time. Takes a little bit more time also to interpret. So if you hit the next slide, so you're kind of asking the question now, what is a representation? Well, a representation formally is a formal system or mapping by which information can be specified. And we know that representation matters because the richest information representation that we have is actually the alphabet. If you think about the alphabet, this is a 24 or 26, I don't know how many letters there are, whatever, 26 different characters. And they allow us to represent everything, talking about English, obviously. These 26 characters allow us to represent all sorts of information that we have. Is it the perfect thing for all the information that we have in the world? No. Some of them, it's easier to represent using charts. It's much easier to understand and interpret that way. But actually, the alphabet is a very powerful information representation tool. Okay, so back to what you see on the slide here. What is the example? You can use decimal to represent number 34. You can use binary to represent it. You can use Roman numerals to represent it. These are different ways of representing the same piece of information. The representation that we choose tells us something specific about the information, and they're better for some things than other things. Okay, so you might say that decimal is sort of the way that we've grown up thinking and learning about numbers, and so it's very efficient in that sort of way. You might say that actually this binary representation is very efficient and useful if we're kind of thinking about computers, which it is. Next slide. So with respect to representations, solving a problem simply means representing it so as to make the solution transparent. This is something that Herb Simon said back in 1981. So Herb Simon was one of the kind of famous cognitive scientists thinking about how we can. And at the time, they were really concerned about AI and stuff like this, right? And so, you know, how do you represent the data for the AI to interpret and make sense of? This is, you know, thinking, they thought a lot about information representation. Visual analytics as a field is also concerned with this basic idea. Can we represent that mass of data in such a way that it's very easy to kind of derive insight? So good representations allow people to find relevant information. It's rarely the case that the information is never there, but it's kind of hard to find, right? It might not be shown in a way that's made obvious. The other thing is that it allows people to compute desired conclusions. So if you pick good representations, the computations may be difficult or for free, and it just depends on the representation itself. So let me show you an example of how this plays out, okay? So just follow me for the next slide. Just read through this one, right? Let's play a game. The game is called 15. The pieces for each game are the 9 digits, 1 through 9. Each player takes a digit in turn. So if I'm playing against you, you take one number, I take the next one. Once a digit is taken, it cannot be used by any other player. The first player to get 3 digits that sum to 15 wins, right? So if I were to pick up 9, 1, and 5, then I would win. So, and so on and so forth. So if you picked up 8, 4, and 3, then you would win. And of course, because this is a pick-up game, basically, as soon as I pick up 9, you can't pick up 9 anymore. All right. So here's a sample game. Player A picks 8, player B takes 2, then A takes 4, B takes 3, A takes 5. Suppose you are now to step in and play for B. What move would you make? So I let you take a little bit of time to think about that, right? You can think about all the different scenarios, right? Okay, so once you've thought about that a little bit, I want you to take a look at the next game, okay? So let's play a game, tic-tac-toe. Players alternately place, so if you've never played this, knots and crosses, sometimes known as X and O's maybe. Place a knot or the symbol O or cross, the symbol X, in one of the 9 spaces arranged in a rectangular array as shown in the illustration. Once the space has been taken, it cannot be changed by either player. The first player gets 3 symbols in a straight line wins. Suppose this player A is X and B is O. The game has reached the following state and you are now player B. You're the one that puts an O. Where are you going to put it? Right. So in this case, it's pretty obvious. You put it in the bottom right-hand corner. Now, if you take a look at the next slide, what you'll see is that actually these two games that I've talked about are the exact same. They're just different representations. They're different representations because what you do is you kind of arrange the numbers in a magic square, but actually the rules are the exact same. So obviously that representation as an X and O's game and that articulation of the rules in that way, this visual representation actually makes it much easier to digest and problem solve on how to resolve what's going on. Right. Whereas in the former representation with the numbers, you have to actually do some math and you need to do some thinking. Right. So information representation typically makes use of 2D space in trying to lay out data in certain ways, changing the representation in terms of glyphs and stuff like this to make it easier to interpret data. If you take a look at the next slide, and this is probably best to do as kind of a slideshow type of thing, so you can actually do the animations and see. What you're going to see here is some data. This is basically, I want you to imagine that you're trying to get from sort of Vancouver to Montreal. And each of these things in the table here, these are the different flights. And they also kind of represent where it's going to when, where it's going from where, and it's also showing you kind of what time the flight leaves and what time it arrives. And I want you to think about sort of see if you can come up with the best flight option to actually get me into Montreal, where perhaps I'm using the fewest number of stopovers and or I'm doing it in the most efficient time. Okay, so I mean, I could let you go ahead and do this, and what you would do is actually you would probably calculate all these different possibilities, and it would be complex, and then I might change it up on you. So the first time I would ask for a series of flights that gets me there and the fewest number of stopovers, and then the next time I would ask you, I want it to be the shortest flight as possible. So if you hit the little button there to see, pop the animation, you'll see that this is a different representation of the exact same data, right? So this is actually representing all of those different flights, but now each flight is a different line. And so you can actually tell that the slope of the line tells you sort of how fast the plane is going and how far it's going and that sort of stuff. And now you can actually use this information to make those decisions about which flights I would take to have the shortest kind of time in the air and also the fewest changeovers and that sort of stuff and what the trade-offs would be. So again, this representation change makes information very visible. It allows me to make all sorts of computations much easier now than it would have been previously, right? Again, another example. Again, probably in the next slide, it's probably easiest to look at, is nicest to look at this sort of through the animation. It turns out that drug-taking regimens, particularly for people who are, say, chemotherapy or just having to take a lot of drugs later in life often, it's very easy to mess up the pills that you're supposed to be taking, even if it's in a pill box, because you get these different ways that these pills are supposed to be administered or taken. Sometimes it's described as three times a day, sometimes every morning, before mealtimes and at bedtime, so on and so forth. So this representation, which is what you get sort of by default on each of the pill bottles, is actually quite confusing. So in contrast, if you just take a look at the next couple, or if you took a look at the next representation, here's one way that you can represent all of that information in a way that it is very difficult to make an error, right? If you take a look at the next one, same kind of information laid out slightly differently, but presumably also fewer errors can be made if you do it this way, right? So changing the changing the representation makes it easy to solve certain problems and to glean certain kinds of information from the data. So one of the questions you might be asking, if you hit the next slide, is what representation is the best? Well, the answer to this is, as with many things in this class, it kind of depends. It depends on what you're trying to do. It depends on your task. So here you can see three different representations that you can get from the system monitor tool, or I think it's called the system profiler in Windows now. That actually show you the processor usage and also the file system usage in terms of reads per second. And each representation here gives you a different kind of information, makes it easy to see certain kinds of information. The one on the right is really cool, but it doesn't do you very well in terms of giving you a precise value. What it does a really good job of doing is kind of telling you the performance over time. The middle one, it gives you kind of what the performance is right now compared to what its most recent peak is. I think peak is calculated based on the last 5 or 10 seconds or something like this. On the left, this is the most simple representation, but what it does is it does a very good job of giving you what the current precise value of usage is, right? So different representations good for different kinds of things. So it depends on your task in terms of choosing a good representation. Next slide. This is something that Big Maps was prototyping, and I thought they had it for a little while, but I can't seem to find it anymore. Nevertheless, the idea still persists. So basically, the thing on the left is the thing that you would get if you kind of did a regular Google Maps search or a Bing Maps search. The thing on the right is something that they call the napkin sketch. And this was kind of a really cool research idea that actually sort of turned into a real product, although, like I said, I don't know if you can find it anymore. But what it was really good at was it was good at telling you the roads that you really needed to care about from one place to another. It would kind of give you the main connectors that you would need to hit to get from one place to another. The thing on the left, obviously, way more busy, right? And so it was harder to sort of grok and interpret kind of right off the top. So the utility of the one on the right is that basically if you're on the right track, everything's fine. Way less information to deal with and all this stuff. The one on the left, way more information, but way easier to find your way around if you had gotten lost, right? So there again, information representations, what's good depends on the task, right? And it depends on the scenario. So what I would argue, if you were asking me, is I would argue for having the one on the right for the most part, if you knew where you're trying to get to. And if you got lost, then you have access to the one on the left. That would be a really useful thing. Which representation is best? It depends also on the user. Depends also on kind of what you care about. It depends on the situation that you're in. I show these two radios, these two kind of dash radios that you can get for cars. One on the right is a little bit harder to find nowadays, obviously. One of the things that they typically say is really great about the thing on the right is that you could feel what station you were on based on which favorite you had just clicked into, right? You could actually feel the buttons. The one on the left, you can't feel the buttons. You have to look. And so you might ask this question, what station am I listening to? What is my ability to look at the display? And you have differential responses on each of these two things. So that's information representation. And if you hit the next slide, I'm going to talk a little bit about Edward Tufte. Edward Tufte is kind of one of these famous artists/designers. He's got these great books. I can't remember what they're called right now, but if you look them up, they're pretty cool. He actually typeset these things himself because he wanted the graphics and the text to be kind of interweaved with one another as he told stories about representations and charts and stuff like this. His basic point is he has kind of two interesting points out there that you can look up. He says that PowerPoint actually can do harm because it changes and it structures the way we think in a very particular way. It changes the way we do presentations. And in fact, if you look it up, he argues that it is actually the reason behind the 1988 NASA Columbia disaster. He says because of the way the slides were structured, it minimized the impact of this crucial piece of information in those presentations. I think this is he's making a very strong point. It's kind of interesting to read about. I think that he would probably roll over and try to shoot me if I tried to explain to you why he thinks PowerPoint can do harm using a PowerPoint deck. Anyway, more to the point for the purposes here, he talks often about chart junk and how chart junk is confusing, overly prevalent, and unnecessary. And he says instead our goal should be high data density. So if you take a look at the next slide, this is the actual quote that he uses, right? So the interior decoration of graphics generates a lot of ink that does not tell the viewer anything new. The purpose of decoration varies: to make a graphic design appear more scientific and precise, to enliven the display, to give a designer an opportunity to exercise artistic skills, perhaps. Regardless of its cause, it is non-data ink or redundant data ink, and it is often chart junk. So one of those books is The Visual Display of Quantitative Information. If you take a look at the next couple of slides, you'll actually see some of this chart junk, right? So here, this is, you know, just a basic graph, and somebody has basically made this graph look like it's 3D. For no reason at all. It doesn't add any additional information. And what Tufte is basically saying is that this is actually, in addition to not adding any information, it is actually taking away from the interpretability of this chart. So this should relate to one of those heuristics that we talked about in terms of simplicity. And at the time I told you that you should try to get away with as little sort of ink on this display as possible. It's not that that ink costs you anything, but it does cost your user time. The more stuff they have to sift through, the more stuff that they have to try to interpret, the longer it's going to take for them to use your system. So same way for this chart, right? This chart is basically representing four different numbers, and that 3D-ness doesn't add anything here. If you take a look at the next slide, the other thing that he talks about is removing deception and simplification. So across these different charts, you'll see that actually these different charts are showing the same piece of information, but they're all lying in a certain way. So the one on the top left is lying because its axis looks like it's starting from zero, but it's not. In addition to that, it's sort of 3D. The one on the top right actually doesn't do a very good job of showing the information, that, i.e. that between these different, I think these are cars, between these different cars, it makes it look like there's no difference in terms of the maintenance cost. It looks basically the same. On the left, it probably does a fair job of kind of showing you that there is a bit of difference, but Tufte would say that this is kind of, there's just too much chart junk here. I don't need to see it in 3D. So he would probably like the one on the right the most. If you take a look at the next slide, basically these are the kinds of things that you would see in popular press, where you have data that has been sort of beautified in certain ways. And he would argue here that this information is made useless because of the chart junk. I believe that if you add up some of these things, they don't even add up properly. I can't remember how this one works. On the right side of the image, you'll see that actually it's not clear. How is it that that thing on the top is 23? Is it because of the length from the origin there, and compare that to West Germany and so on and so forth, right? So I'll say at this point that I generally agree with Tufte's argument about chart junk. I believe that information that doesn't have extra adornment, that contains no information, I believe that that is, like, not having that adornment is a good thing because it just makes information very, very clear. I will add at this point, because I think it's interesting and kind of just worth pointing out, just to show you that not everything is cut and dry, that the evidence is a little bit mixed. There does appear to be some evidence that shows that chart junk helps people to remember things a little bit better. So it's a little bit controversial in the scientific literature as of late, but it is generally received wisdom that chart junk is a bad thing. So I would err on the side of not having any chart junk at all. All right, so next slide. A related concept to this is data density. Graphics are at their best when they represent very dense and rich data sets. And the key here is use only the ink you need to use. Tufte defines data density as follows. So it's kind of an abstract concept, but here's how he articulates it. Data density is the number of entries in a data matrix, so how much data are you trying to represent, divided by the area of the graphic. One of the examples that Tufte is really, like, kind of just loves and is kind of totally in love with is one that you can see on the next couple slides. So the slide right below is one representation of Napoleon's march to Moscow. It's kind of interesting because it shows a lot of things. So what happens, there's an interesting history lesson here. But basically what happens is Napoleon starts with a really, really big army and he's marching to Moscow. And he marches over the course of, through the winter, I think. And there's some starvation, some desertion, some suicide going on. Part of the group actually heads back a little bit earlier. And then they make it to Moscow, something happens, and then what happens is they kind of need to head back. And, you know, because of the winter and all this stuff, the number of men that Napoleon has dwindles. And so by the time he actually gets back home, he has almost none of his French army left. And you can actually, if you look carefully on this first image on slide 26, you can actually kind of divine this information, given that I've just sort of told you this story. What's really fascinating is if you go to the next slide, this is something, a chart that was created by a guy named Menard, and it's super famous. So basically the width and the height of the it actually shows you the march to Moscow. You can actually see where part of the troops went back. You can see how he relates that to, I think this is the temperature, I believe. The temperature of the, in terms of degrees, as they went along on their march. You can actually see how many troops he had. And you can see that basically by the time he gets back, he has almost literally no troops. And this representation, Tufte would say, is super, super dense. It's got a lot of information kind of all packed in there. And you can actually divine this information. Obviously, you kind of need to know a little bit about the story. But actually, once you know the story, it's pretty fascinating. It looks like he goes from something in the order of 400,000 men to basically 4,000 men by the time he makes it back, which is absolutely insane. Okay, so that basically brings us to the end of this slide deck on information representation. For the next couple, I'll be talking about information visualization. Thanks.